This is F1 Debrief. I demand a magic paddle. Coming up this week, we talk TV directors, engagement presents, and the severe lack of safety cars.
Woohoo!
What?
How good was that?
Quite good.
Absolutely flipping brilliant. Oh my goodness. Oh wow. Oh yes.
Can we just clarify what we're talking about here?
I'm talking about you taking over and managing Side Podcast all by yourself without my help or intervention for the last couple of days. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Oh, I thought we were talking about the race.
Oh no, we're going to talk about that in a minute. I mean, there's a lot of woohoos about to say about the race, but you know, thanks for looking after Side Podcast for me.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for PR people as the BBC gave Williams communications lady Sophie Eden 4 minutes to find Pastor Maldonado for a live interview. She went off to get him and found him naked on his bed having a leg massage. According to Williams, after much frenetic activity, Sophie got him to the pit garage in overalls with 20 seconds to spare.
That's a whole vision I didn't need to have.
I do apologise about the mental image there.
Why
is
Sophie
naked for a leg massage?
Of all the men to walk in on.
Yeah. It's been a bad week for common decency as Pirelli turned up with their new F1 motorhome. It's very nice, matte black, interesting finish, but also adorned with Pirelli calendars.
Inside.
There's a bit of a theme going on with
tasteful.
This.
Tasteful.
Good week, bad week. It's been a good week for Petra Ecclestone, who had an engagement party recently.
And has she taken all her clothes off too?
No. Oh. She was gifted an £800,000 Bugatti Veyron by her generous father, Mr. Bernie.
And she got that without taking her clothes off? Lucky girl.
It's been a bad week for various media types as they found their car park turned into a bit of a mud bath in Turkey. We know what that's like. We've seen it at Silverstone. In the latest edition of GP Plus, there's a great picture of loads of cars and you just think, how are they going to get out of that?
It's a bit like Silverstone when Silverstone that year that it was early and was wet and all the cars had to be towed in and towed out. Poor media people.
News and views.
Williams had quite a lot of news this week and actually most of it, it was quite sad because I think it was sort of expected that Sam Michael announced his resignation. He'd already hinted that he would do that if it was so desired.
He was the man who said, I have no idea what the problem at Williams is. Therefore, all fingers pointed to him.
Yeah, he and John Tomlinson both tendered their resignation. It's nice that afterwards Ruben said, well, this is just silly. He's being made a scapegoat because he's doing about the work of 5 or 6 people, and it's just not fair.
Because Williams don't have the money. They don't have the capacity or the staff to do what he's doing. I have always quite liked Sam Michael. He's a young guy, and there aren't very many young engineers of that calibre in Formula One. I don't know if he is being the scapegoat, because, again, the buck stopped at him, and he didn't have any answers. He ran out of ideas. He ran out of places to go. Williams have been struggling. They need to do something different. Something has to change. Just for the, almost for the sake of change, something has to change. Michael has to go.
And so the other big change is they're bringing in, next month, they're bringing in Mike Coughlan. Now, you may have heard of him before.
We might have spent a good summer discussing Mike Coughlan. I wouldn't have been sad if we never discussed him again.
No.
Would you say he ruined the best season of Formula One ever?
Well,
back when he did what he did.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of... It's happening more and more because all these people keep cheating and stuff, but we keep
and
on...
And then coming back.
We keep on having these conversations about whether these people should be allowed back in the paddock, but all I can think is, if he comes back and suddenly Williams start doing well, aren't we going to be like, what is going on here?
Well, the thing is, Mike obviously thinks a lot of himself. He thinks... he thought he could create a super engineering team. Was he trying to take it to Honda back way back when? That was his master plan. He thought he could do better than what McLaren were doing. So if you can walk into McLaren and say, actually, I think I can do better than all of you, you've got to have a pretty, you know, you've got a big head on your shoulders to try and get away with that. And I'm sure that hasn't gone away despite everything that's happened. I do worry about Formula One in general as a result of this, because firstly, it's clearly not doing enough to bring in young talent. If all these people keep getting recycled around, you know, you get caught cheating, you get banned from the sport, you get thrown out of the paddock, and then you get to walk back in a couple of years later. We've seen it with Flavio. Pat Simmons is now working at Virgin. You've got Nigel Stepney is in a smaller category motorsport team, but I'm sure will be looking to come back to Formula One as soon as he can. You've got someone like Peter Windsor who failed with USF1, still trying to get back into Formula One. You just kind of think that maybe there's a certain lack of depth of talent because there isn't this other talent pool that you can just draw on when you need these people to come back into Formula One. Mike Coughlan really is the best. The Williams, it's the best option for Williams right now, and he hasn't even been in the sport for 2 years.
No, and it's interesting that you say that because, like when Christian Horner came in as the youngest team principal ever, and that was really exciting and everything. But that was like 10 years ago now. So nothing. There's been no one new and exciting since
then.
There are
young driver programs, but are there young engineer programs? And if so, are they doing what they should be doing? Is it enough? Because, you will hear talk of Adrian Newey being the superstar designer who's designed all these fantastic championship-winning cars throughout the ages, and he's gone from team to team, and he's such a genius, and no one can possibly match him. And Mike Coughlan can't match him, and Sam Michael can't match him. But you do wonder whether or not the reason the guy hasn't got any competition is because there is nobody coming in to F1.
He needs an apprentice.
I think maybe if you've got the opportunity and you've got the intelligence to work in Formula One, there are better places to go. Who will pay you more money?
But I mean, there are all those programs like F1 in schools and the engineering things they do with all the kids designing the cars. But there does seem to be a gap between, obviously, those are school children. Mm. And then there's a gap and then there's Formula One.
We should definitely investigate because I cannot believe that all there is out there, the only guy that Williams can get in to replace Sam Michael is Mike Coughlan. And maybe that's just the way Formula One is. Still, in Formula One, cheats prosper and Ferrari aren't too worried about it. McLaren aren't too worried about it. They clearly, it just almost seems to go with the territory. Yeah, they cheated. Yeah, they stole a 186-page dossier of all our designs for our championship-winning car, and they photocopied it, and they were going to disseminate that information and give it to another team, but we'll just let them come back in the paddock. We won't raise a fuss. Nothing to say. Water under the bridge.
In other news, Team Lotus, they have bought out or done a deal with Caterham to expand the line into F1 and road cars and things like that. I don't really know what the deal is about. It wasn't that interesting. What I did like was that it tied in with a straight line test. So all the Lotus drivers, including all their many, many test drivers, all turned up at Duxford Airfield and did some testing in both Formula One and Caterham cars. I do like testing.
Yes. And Mr. John Todd, he's dangled a carrot in front of us, and he suggested that Formula One in-season testing might make a return. Oh, yes.
Well, he wants it to come back. I think he is proposing 3 separate tests of 2 days each, which actually, while that does seem like a good idea, I wonder if teams and that are going to be on board of bringing all their stuff to somewhere just for 2 days.
That could be an issue. I see what John's point is that there isn't enough young talent coming into Formula One due to a lack of testing. So you can't bring someone in mid-season. It means that if you start the season, you're almost guaranteed to finish it because it's too risky to bring a new driver in without being able to test. And as we saw with Luca Badoa, however long ago it was that he super subbed for Massa, it is a big problem. And John's on to something. I think it's a good idea. Again, love straight line testing. Didn't manage to go to Duxford, didn't have time, but on any other occasion probably could have gone along, and it looked like a great day out.
It was nice that Lotus on Twitter and on the site and everything were like, we're going to be in Duxford, come along and see us, whereas yes, most straight line tests are very secretive and we're not here, we're not doing this really.
Yes, I mean, I have been thrown out of a straight line test for taking photographs of McLaren, so I do know that they can be secretive, and thank you Lotus for inviting people to come along. Like I said, I wish I could have been there. It was a lovely day, lovely sunny day. Did some great, I don't know whether they really learned too much from their straight line testing. I wonder if that wasn't a bit of a waste from their point of view, but huge publicity. They've definitely got this PR business down to a T. I think Tony Fernandez is a bit of a genius, and I think he's pulled the rabbit out of the hat with the Caterham deal. I like what he's doing. It's going to be very interesting to see where this goes. But Team Tony, still my favourite. I'm still favouring Team Tony over Lotus Renault GP. I think that what he's going to do with the brand is a lot more down to earth and has a greater chance of succeeding. So great news for John Todd, great news for Lotus, good news all round, I would say.
John Todd did manage to let himself down, though. It was good news about the testing, but then at the same time he did say that Bahrain could have another extension.
Oh, that was not smart. He bowed to Bernie's pressure or political pressure from the Bahrainis. This is just bad all round, isn't it?
Well, I mean,
it's not great for the FIA, it's not great for Bernie, it's not great for Formula One.
I feel for the country and the organisers and that they want a Grand Prix. I can understand that, but at some point you just have to say, no, look, it's not going to happen this year. We'll come back next year and it'll be better then.
So John's cancelled out all his good work
It's neutral again.
Bah.
The other news is not really news, so we're only going to mention it briefly. The potential News Corp takeover of Formula One, except Bernie says F1 is not for sale, so there's not much to say about it, really.
What do you think? Okay, let's hypothetically speak briefly, because it is only a rumour. The idea that the parent company
it's
of Ferrari...
It's not a rumour. They've confirmed they're looking into it, but CVC haven't said they're up. They're going to sell it. So.
No. Well, CVC are...
It's very one-sided.
Venture capitalist company, right? And their goal is to make money for their shareholders and for their owners. And they have, as far as I understand, they have no desire to promote Formula One. They have no love for Formula One, and therefore they're only interested in the money. And the question is, with any venture capitalist, how much? That's all that really matters. And therefore, CVC Formula One is for sale. Because of who they're owned by, regardless of what Bernie says. I'm just curious what you think of the potential of the sport being owned by the parent company of a single team and Rupert Murdoch. Could you think of a worse concept?
It's very complicated. I tried to fathom all the different links that they have with, obviously, Rupert Murdoch has 5 billion different properties in media.
Yes.
And Fiat are part of it's to do with the family that owns Fiat or something.
Yes, you couldn't find two more complicated company structures to try and come together on this deal.
The Ferrari thing worries me more. I mean, people have varying opinions on Rupert Murdoch, but at the end of the day, he does do some good things and is somewhat forward thinking as well.
Yes, he has the daily iPad, what would you call it, like virtual newspaper.
Yeah.
So he's forward thinking in that respect. Good news for Formula One.
Yeah, but it's the Ferrari bit that worries me more, because that would mean Ferrari own Formula One, and they do enough of that as it is.
Some would argue they already do, and therefore it makes no odds, at least hypothetically. Again, we'll have to see what comes of it. You do wonder whether or not it's good to be putting all those eggs in an Italian basket.
Qualifying.
As ever, we'll just mention free practice quickly. I mean, the main thing about it was that Sebastian Vettel crashed his car.
Why can he not do that when it matters?
It was quite an epic fail from him, but I suppose he blames it on the weather, because it was raining.
Dipping down. It was a very wet Friday. Didn't manage to catch it. I just saw the aftermath of the accident. However, neither did any of the circuit photographers.
No.
All we saw was the aftermath. No, I guess because it was wet, nobody fancied going out. Nobody fancied trekking around there with a camera. And I don't think anybody caught it, at least nothing I've seen so far.
He couldn't take part in free practice 2. His car was that trashed. And apparently the mechanics were working until 1 a.m. or whatever the curfew actually is that night.
Right up to the curfew limit, yep. I did read somewhere that Horner and Newey were also there, poking their nose in and keeping an eye on the mechanics to make sure that it all got rebuilt for their Wonder Boy.
I think they said it was moral support, but I think I'd prefer them just to be out of the way,
yes,
to be honest.
Yeah, maybe they just don't trust their mechanics. They just like to keep an eye on everything they do.
But also... they were there until whatever time it was, 1 o'clock, and also their wives were there, or partners, too. So that sounds like a fun night out.
What should we do? Let's sit in the Istanbul paddock until everything is closed.
Maldonado also crashed his car as well, so it wasn't just Vettel having a bit of a moment.
That was his new wing for the weekend gone. Again, Williams struggled to bring new parts and spare parts ready for this race. There was only one going, and he broke it.
Of course, Maldonado doesn't have the excuse that it was raining, but I don't suppose he needs an excuse, really.
He's Maldonado. Yeah. That was his excuse.
That was about it for free practice. In qualifying, there was not so much excitement.
There was no excitement in qualifying. I'll tell you what, the highlight of my Saturday was Rob Smedley and Felipe Massa doing a track guide on the BBC. After that, there really was nothing to talk about, nothing worth watching on Saturday.
No, I mean, there were a couple of bits and pieces, like Kobayashi, he couldn't set a time in the first session of qualifying, and that meant he was out already. So that it was interesting.
You're struggling.
Yeah,
I can hear you're struggling.
It was interesting and sad for him, and also it meant that we already knew who was going to be the big name out with the others. But then it was good to note that Kovalainen is catching up to the other packs. He might make it into Q2 at some point soon.
He might, but he's not catching up quick enough.
It's only a few tenths off.
I expected him to start the season up there. No. This is race 4, still not up there.
Poor Team Tony, being mean to them now.
I like their PR. they're not where they should be given the equipment they have. Mm. Paul, was it Trilly who said, "I've had no power steering at all this season"?
Yeah,
until
he did
this
say
race.
That.
Power steering. How can they still be having hydraulic problems? How?
Okay.
Fix it.
Okay. You are right that I don't recall Q2 at all, so that can't have been very interesting. But I do remember Q3 because it was just rude.
It was rude?
Well, Red Bull, they were super fast. We all expected Vettel to get pole. It's impossible for him not to get pole. It just doesn't happen anymore.
Well, even when he crashes his car on Friday and doesn't do any running.
And it has to be rebuilt and everything. Yep. Doesn't make any difference. He is super fast. So fine. He set a time maybe midway through.
It was half a second faster than anybody had been all weekend. Yeah. Yep.
And so he went back to the garage and he got out of the car. He watched the rest of the session on the screen. Now, fine, he is that fast, but he could at least pretend to still be trying. Just sit in the car until it's over. It's only 5 minutes.
We discussed this on the last show. Qualifying is going to be an issue as teams figure out the time management. They're going to run less and less and less. I think we saw the TV director being prepared for this, because at the start of Q3 there was a replay package showing all the cars going through turn 8, a side-by-side comparison of everybody taking on turn 8, as if nobody expected any cars to run in the first part of Q3, and it's the way it's going to be. It's just going to get worse and worse as the season progresses, as teams understand more and more about the tyres. They'll use them less, they'll need to do less runs. I think we saw Massa do an extra run in Q2 because he wasn't confident about the tyres. As soon as they have the confidence, that will go away. Qualifying is missable this year.
Yeah, I mean, Massa didn't bother setting a time at all. A couple of the other drivers decided to just set the one lap. Obviously, Vettel was more than happy with his. So we were just left watching people like Rosberg, who managed to get up to P3, which was very good, but at the same time, wasn't that exciting, really.
No. Disappointed in qualifying. That was the low point of my weekend, I think.
It is worth saying that I saw someone on Twitter said, Katie Luem said, on the bright side, last year, qualifying was far more interesting than the race. If one of them has to be boring, I'd prefer it to be qualifying.
I cannot argue with that at all. I'll take that, thank you. But I just might not watch.
The race. So qualifying was quite dull, and the race was pretty fantastic.
Amazing!
Oh, you are going back to that. Woo-hoo.
Goodness me, yes! I cheered, I whooped, I hollered, I jumped up and down, I bounced with excitement. For a second, I thought it wasn't Formula One. I couldn't believe how excited I was at watching this sport. It's been so many years. I don't remember the last time I jumped out of my seat watching a Grand Prix like I did today. The fun is back. Oh yes, it's where do you begin?
Well,
start at the beginning.
Let's begin at the beginning. First lap, very clean, very they're all so professional.
This is not like Formula One that we used to know.
No. It's worth pointing out the TV director was absolutely terrible. And we had one lap of racing and then we missed an entire lap just on replays.
Yes. I really wanted to see. There was a great, great fight going on between the two McLaren drivers. And they were nose to tail. I could see them on the iPad timing app so close. You could see them on the live timing, you know, ebbing and flowing, the gaps between them in each sector. And the TV director was just showing the replay of the start.
Which was
nothing
clean.
Nothing happened at the start. It was, you know, we like replays. Replays are important when the action has died down. The action didn't die down. I don't quite know where you would fit in a replay during that race, but it was
not then.
Not then. It was just the wrong point.
In the comments, Alex said, we're now going to have to watch replays of the lap that we missed because of the replays. And it could have gone on like that for the whole race, just on delay.
Just a massive time delay because of that. I don't know what was going on. The television director was terrible.
I can't say that I envy his job, though.
But have some common sense.
Last year, if it was the same person that did it last year, they were like, well, I'll just watch whatever and then I'll put in some replays and nothing will happen. We won't miss anything. He was wrong.
It was clearly somebody who didn't watch the race in China. They weren't expecting it. But what I did see, I flipping loved.
So like you say, there was some brilliant battling between Button and Hamilton.
Replays, echoes of exactly what happened in the same circuit last year. That's what they did. Last time out, it was Hamilton who got the better of Button. This time out, Jenson Button came off best. Now, when was the last time you could say that? In a straight fight, in the same car as Lewis Hamilton, when was the last time, on the dry circuit too, did Jenson Button come out in front of Lewis Hamilton? That was fantastic racing and a surprising result.
And they didn't crash into each other, which is just, they never do, basically. Mm. And when you see things like, everyone kept saying this race, how the Red Bull finish was, it got rid of all the demons of last year when they crashed into each other. But no one ever says that about cars that don't crash into each other.
No, exemplary racing from both those guys. It was, I mean, Lewis killed his tires very quickly, and you saw as soon as Button had got the better of him, he just fell back. He fell back into Nico's arms. Nico passed him very easily, and then he had to pit. So those tires were shot to pieces very quickly, but it was worth it. I don't care. They could burn up tires in two laps, as long as those two laps. I mean, what fantastic passing.
Both of them seemed quite disappointed after the race, though. Hamilton felt he could have done a bit better. Button was not at all happy with his strategy. He was one of the few of the top 10. I think there was only three drivers maybe in the top 10 that were on a three-stop strategy as opposed to a four-stop. And he felt that it was the wrong thing to do, which it clearly was. And also that the team kept calling him in too early and his tyres were fine and he could have kept going for a bit longer.
I would assume that he was just mad that he got the better of Lewis and still finished behind him, despite driving so well.
But we do have a bit of TED news. After the race, he did his little video diary thing and had a quick peek into the McLaren motorhome where Button was looking downcast, talking to some journalists and stuff. And then Ted came out and said, well, basically, the McLaren team say that Jensen was going too slowly.
He was conserving his tyres, which he felt was the right thing to do.
If you were on a three-stop.
Yeah, because he knows that he's light on his tyres and he knows that he was... I mean, what he did was get the most out of... what he had, however, he just wasn't going quick enough to achieve it. What I think that tells us is that at the beginning of the season, everybody assumed that easily degrading tyres benefit those who are conservative. So people who take it easy and play the long game and wait till the end of the race to make the difference. And what it appears to have actually done is benefited the racier drivers who are willing to go out there and kill their tyres and then come in and change them quickly and then go out there again and kill them. That benefits Lewis, despite the fact he seems very grumpy about his tyres disappearing from under him after just a handful of laps. Actually, those who are willing to stop more and do more damage, and you know, if you're willing to save your tyres in qualifying it and go into the race with enough tyres to make it to the end, to make four stops, to make a four-stop strategy work, you're in the box seats then.
After the race, Hamilton was like, how many times did I come in? Four or five? It was only four times. It seemed like a lot more. I mean, there were 80-something stops in the whole race. I think they said that the people from Pirelli don't want it to be like this. They don't want four-stop strategies to be the optimum. They want it to be three with a few people wavering either way. So they have learnt from this race that actually this probably was too much.
Do you think it was too much?
It felt to me that the tyres didn't play such a massive part in this race as much as it have in other words.
Do you think it was more of a DRS race than the tyre race?
I think it probably was. I don't know.
There is an argument to say that the DRS was a little bit too good. On occasion, there was you saw one car just breeze past the other car without making too much effort. And what I liked about the DRS at this race was the way it was positioned over the crest of the hill. Every time you saw a shot of the rear of the cars going over the hill, you could see whose rear wing was open and whose was closed. Instantly, you could see when the DRS is working. In previous races, it's not been too clear unless you've had the rear-facing camera pointing at the rear wing. But it was good to see, I think, when three cars go into the DRS zone and two manage to pass one. I think that's a great use of it. I mean, that's really good to see. So they're going to change this from race to race, and sometimes they're going to get it right, sometimes they're going to get it wrong, and they're going to learn from it year on year. Possibly DRS made it a fraction too easy, but again, we saw with Lewis and Jensen, I mean, that was perfect. You cannot question the DRS when they were that close, and they kept at each other lap after lap.
Noble F1 on Twitter, that's Jonathan Noble from Autosport, he said, mixed feelings about the Turkish GP today. I love the new rules, but do fear overtaking is a bit devalued now. And I think it is right on the edge of that.
It was borderline, but his, Noble's, what? Not teammate, he's not his teammate, Noble's co-worker? Associate, LEGP. He did a quick straw poll on Twitter and concluded that the general feeling from everybody was that actually it doesn't matter if it's fake as long as it's entertaining. And I do agree with that. It's okay if it's not real racing, because there is no definition of what real racing is, and everybody will have a different opinion on where that lies. But to me, it's fine if we get races like we get today. And, you know, this was this was better than China. And I love the Chinese Grand Prix, yet this was even better.
Well, we do have to rate the race later, but let's not talk about that yet. There was one moment, I can't remember who it was because I was busy fact boxing something else, but there were two battles sort of going on at the same time. And one of them was with the DRS going forward and the other person was stuck behind, even though they could have used a DRS as well. So it was like, it does make it easy sometimes, but not always. You do still have to be good at what you're doing.
I mean, this season is it already becoming a classic season. It's easily becoming my favourite season for years. When was the last time I could say this about Formula One? It's so good. Qualifying? Terrible. But the race just more than makes up for it.
Let's look at some other people. Schumacher, he bounced off at least three different cars. There's something very, very wrong there.
Yeah, it's the thing inside the cockpit driving the car.
Yeah, he didn't look strong all weekend and was thoroughly miserable in all the interviews I saw.
Tell me the last time Michael Schumacher looked strong all weekend.
No, that's true. But
2005?
I mean, compared to Rosberg, who...
2004.
Mercedes showed greater pace and Rosberg was far happier, got third in qualifying. Now, in the race, it doesn't work out for them. And actually, Ross Brawn said afterwards that he felt that as a team, they'd focused too much on qualifying. And as we are seeing, and as you've already said, qualifying not worth anything, not even worth going out there. So they need to focus more on their strategy in the race. And I think he said they were too heavy. The fuel was too heavy on the tyres and things like that. So they've got a lot to work on, but they showed great pace. Well, one half of the team did anyway.
Yeah, I do not understand why, if they've got the same engine as McLaren, McLaren aren't having these fuel issues that Mercedes are having, because it's not the first time we've seen it this season. They do seem to have, they struggle in that area. Maybe it's just the way they've got the aero set up. It's just causing so much drag. It's just burning up fuel more than the McLaren is.
Another team with improved pace this weekend was Ferrari. Alonso finished third behind Webber.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to see teams battling with the Red Bulls, because otherwise they're untouchable.
They are untouchable. They're not really close to it, are they? Webber's not on Vettel's pace, and therefore he's backing himself into Alonso. What happened to Massa? Because the Ferrari did look better. Fair dues. They've scratched their heads. They thought, we haven't really got the pace
they've
we thought we had in
testing. Sulking.
Yeah.
and thought about it a bit more. And Massa did have
in.
Yeah, Massa did have the, there was a pit stop problem and they couldn't get the tyre off, or it was spinning round or something.
Yes. I did Manip say, I think he tweeted that Massa should be very disappointed in his pit
kicking
service.
Chairs over, I think Manip
yeah,
said.
It was subpar.
But what are they gonna do? The wheel was spinning round. You can't, I mean, they'd have taken their arm off if they tried to change that tyre.
Yes, but was part of that Massa's problem? I don't know what happened there. That's unusual. You wouldn't expect to see that. I mean, Hamilton was similarly stuffed by his own pit crew in that respect. Jensen had a stuck wheel. So the more pit stops there are, the more we have these four stop strategies, the more the crews have to do and the more likely mistakes are going to happen, surely. There's more pressure on those guys.
As mentioned, Red Bull were just too fast. They got a 1-2 finish. Martin Brundle said a few times during the race, just what do the other cars have to do to get near to Vettel? He's supreme in qualifying. He's untouchable when he's out in front in a race. He just doesn't make mistakes when he's out
on Friday
in front. Yeah, when he's out in front in the race. And also, we had more TED news. He said that this is the first race all season so far when both Red Bull cars have both had fully functioning KERS throughout the whole race. So they've got that sorted now. They really do have no problems.
No one can get near Sebastian Vettel because the team principal and the technical director are rebuilding his car for him when he breaks it.
Would you like them to build other cars as well?
Well, you don't see Martin Whitmarsh rebuilding Lewis's car.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You know, it's the...
They
the
all
entire
love him.
Team is focused around that man. No one can get near him because they all love him. Mark Webber has no chance. Mark Webber needs to either go to another team or leave Formula One, because in the position he's in at the moment, he's not going to get anywhere. He did much better this weekend. Well done, Mark. He's still miles off of Vettel.
There were just two retirements in the race, although Glock didn't really start the race. He had a gearbox problem on the formation lap and or on his way to the grid even, and they tried to rebuild it but they just didn't have time.
Just came to me, there was in free practice one, I didn't hear this at the time but was told about it later, an interview with someone from Virgin who admitted that last year's car, last year's CFD-designed Virgin car, went in a wind tunnel. But this year's hasn't yet. So, okay. You know, keep watching.
We thought that at some point this year they were going to do that. But
they did. They've already done
it. They have already done it. And they're still terrible.
Absolutely rubbish.
They did also, in I think it was free practice or qualifying, they did say that they tried some parts, some new parts on the car. And I think they tried a new exhaust upgrade and it didn't work. They found cracks in the exhaust, so they couldn't run it. So they couldn't bring the updates they wanted and their gearbox fell apart. Not a good weekend for Virgin. And D'Ambrosio got a 5-place grid penalty. So I think we'll just wipe this weekend under the table for Virgin and let's we'll start
pretend
again.
They weren't there.
Yeah.
The only people who did worse than them was Tony Oliuzzi, who managed to end up, was he 5 laps down at the end of the race? What a shocker. What happened there?
I don't know how he did that.
Quite an achievement.
The other retirement was Paul Di Resta, who I think he went in for a pit stop in his Force India, and then they asked him to stop because they were worried about something with the wheel. Perhaps they hadn't put the wheel nut on properly or
something.
It's
a high-pressure job, I tell you. That's where the championship is going to be won and lost. The championship isn't going to be lost. That's where second place in the championship is going to be won and lost. In the pits.
Ahead of the last two races, I think people have been like, when are we going to see the first safety car? When is there going to be a big crash? And there isn't. We've seen a couple of cars bouncing off each other, Schumacher, and things like that. But I don't think there are going to be a lot of safety cars. Maybe the occasional thing at Monaco where there's no room to clear things away.
Canada's going to be the same.
Yeah, but in terms of a big crash causing a big safety car thing, I don't think we're going to see that this much. And it's because there just isn't the need, the desperate need to get past someone so much that you will risk a massive crash or risk messing it up so badly. You don't need to do that to get past someone. There's going to be other opportunities.
Because of the DRS this year.
And all the other options are.
The introduction of the system that will allow you to follow another car closer means you get 2, 3, 4, 5 bites of the cherry. So you're not going to just throw your car into any available space that you can see. You're going to pick your moment. And I guess that's why we're not seeing so many accidents from the start line either, because people know that right now, once upon a time, maybe last year, year before, Formula One, the first lap was the only lap that mattered and your race was won and lost on that first lap.
Yeah, but we saw Rosberg was in third and he got up to second on the line, but he wasn't bothered to push for first. I mean, probably thought he couldn't take Vettel if he needed to, but the opportunity might come up later on. So there's no desperate need to do it right there and then. And I think, I mean, you can imagine that you would have seen Alonso being really frustrated, stuck behind someone.
Yeah.
And then
last year in Turkey,
making a desperate leap for it and crashing, and then causing a safety car or whatever.
It was last year in Turkey when he took out Petrov in the last lap or the final lap, whereby he'd been stuck behind Petrov for about 6 or 7 laps. And he knew that it was now or never to get this point. And he just threw it in there and he knocked Petrov off and he damaged his wheel.
Yeah. But you don't see that because this time he had so many fights with Webber and it just wasn't all pent up frustration like that.
I love this DRS. It makes Formula One better in so many ways.
Does seem to be a bit safer so far. Just a couple of other notes before we rate the race. I dread to think what high number you're going to come up with.
15.
Buemi did really well. I can't quite remember where he started, but it was somewhere in the midfield somewhere, and he got up into the points. So that was really good. At one point he was up in 5th. And no one, I mean, the world feed didn't show him at all. He wasn't there. Anonymous.
I didn't see either Toro Rosso on track today, no.
No, well, Alguersuari was way down, not important. But Buemi was right up there fighting, you know, he had good strategy calls. He was fighting for points and you wouldn't have known he was there. The other interesting one was Kobayashi, who, as we said, started right down at the bottom. And he finished 10th, so he picked up a point, which is pretty good. I mean, it doesn't seem quite as exciting as Webber's 18th to podium finish.
No. However, he did a darn sight better than his highly rated teammate, or highly rated by me at one point this season, teammate. Sergio Perez, did he have a crash early on? I saw him in the pits for some reason. What happened there?
He did come in for a nose change almost straight away, but I don't know what happened.
I really had high hopes and aspirations for Sergio Perez, and Kobayashi did exactly what we wanted him to do, and he outdrove Perez. Obviously Perez started way in front of him and finished way behind him, and that really sums up Perez's day. So not a good day for him, not a good day for Di Resta. He had a great opening race, had high hopes for him. He seems to have slightly fallen down in this Grand Prix. So Yeah, Buemi, well done. A man who's, we know is driving for his seat. We know that he's driving, you know, the team have, there's a question mark over him.
I don't think he is.
He isn't?
No.
You think I'll just worry?
The other one is.
Really? Now? You think it's swung now? You think the balance has gone that way?
Yeah, I do.
Interesting. Before the race, I would have said, certainly after qualifying, I would have said, why on earth are we coming to Turkey? Oh my goodness me, what a terrible place to be. There's no fans. Nobody cares about it. It's in the middle of bloody nowhere. But
to me, there seem to be more fans like on the hills and on the general access areas than there were in the grandstand. So I reckon it's got a lot to do with ticket prices.
Mm. I wouldn't be surprised. But like I said, in qualifying, I would have said that. And you know, I think that would have been a justified argument. However, after the race, what a great track. Really love the last section. Love the way that it brings cars closer together. I love the fact that the undulations, love turn eight, can't really fold it at all. Great.
Oh, you're in such a good mood.
Yeah. Do you want to rate the race?
I think we'd better do that. I will remind you that so far we've got Australia 7, Malaysia 9, and China 9.5 for you. Are you going to go ahead and subdivide it again?
I really do have an issue here. Why didn't anybody tell
me? We should have started on 4.
Yeah, but I based it on what happened last year. And, the race was better than China. I enjoyed it even more. I enjoyed it more than any race for the last 2 years. Also, I can't see any way of improving it, personally. My job, while you're doing the Fact by Fact Box, is to load down things like lap times and see who's, you know, to find out where the car, you know, who's the closest battle on the track. For 12 laps, I just watched the telly.
You're my spotter and you were quite useless.
As a spotter, I didn't spot very much. I didn't comment very much. I just was glued to the television.
So stop procrastinating. 9.75?
Well, the thing is, I want to give it a 10.
Give it a 10 then.
Well, what happens if the next race is even better?
We can cross that bridge when we come to it.
If I give it a 10, what I'm saying is the Turkish Grand Prix is the best race of the season. And that doesn't sound right because we've still got Monza to come. We've got Spa to come. We've got Silverstone to come. I can't give the Turkish Grand Prix the best race of the season that cannot get better and that's it, can I?
Okay, 9.75 it is then.
Yes.
Right, okay, well...
9.75.
Yes. So for me, I gave Australia a 6, Malaysia an 8.
Wise girl, yeah.
And China a 9.
So now you've got only 10 to get, right?
I am going to give it a 10.
You're going to give this a 10?
Yeah, the only thing that could have made it better for me in the scope of the year that we're in, because obviously I do still have issues with this year that we've talked about before, but in this season, the only thing that would have made it better for me was if Petrov was a bit better.
Right.
And that's just because he's rubbish. So I'm going to give it a 10.
I would have liked to have seen Massa have a bit more luck, because Massa looks to all intents and purposes like he's feisty again. It looks like he's in control of the car and it looks like he can do good things with that car. And he's done that for the last two races and he's had bad luck in both of them. And I really feel like he should have done more at the end of this race. He should have ended up higher because he had the car to do it. We saw the Ferrari was good. He has the ability to do it because we know he's great in Turkey. Even when he was rubbish everywhere else, he was great in Turkey. This is definitely Massa's circuit. And I really had high hopes for him. So that was my only disappointment, I think.
Which leads us nicely on to who is the driver of the day.
I want you to go first on this one.
Really?
I haven't decided.
You
need to hear your argument first.
Are you going to draw it out forever and ever?
You might.
Well, I thought about Alonso. I thought about it because, well, and then I thought about Webber because I really liked the battle between those two. But then Webber, if you compare it to Vettel, it's just not so good. And Alonso, if you compare him to Massa, that is really good. But I wasn't quite convinced. And actually, in the end, I am going for Buemi because I think he did a really good job. Compared to his teammate, he was much better. And considering that we didn't get to see any of him at all, I just think that Buemi gets my driver of the day.
Do you know what? I can't beat that. I can't say that you're wrong. To a degree, he may well have been the driver of the day. The only mitigating factor, I didn't really see him do very much. Obviously, he kept his nose clean and ended up where he did. That was great. We did see a lot of Alonso, and I thought he drove well. Possibly, Kobayashi deserved driver of the day. The only other person I think who deserves it more was Vettel. And as much as it annoys me to say it, he never, you know, nothing fazed him. Nothing slowed him down. He had it easy. But he's the only guy out there who didn't do a, you know, he didn't really make a mistake. It's either him or Alonso, and I'm not sure either of those deserve it. It's going to have to be Vettel. Begrudgingly, I give it to Vettel.
Good, we got there in the end then. Now, let's hear from someone else. Let's give us a break from talking and hear from Lukey, who gives us his thoughts on the race.
Hi, guys. Lukey here, as ever. So the Turkish Grand Prix, that's a brilliant race. And I said it so many times today, but I'm just enjoying Formula One so much this year. It's just so good to watch. It's really enjoyable to watch. And, you know, just the McLaren today were immense. Again, just so much fun to watch. It was a shame that Jensen's race went so downhill with strategy, because I thought he was just ridiculously entertaining. But, you know, there's people like Kobayashi as well. I thought he had a good race. You know, it looked so good for Rubens. It really did. And then it disappeared like a thing disappearing from a very disappearing place. But it's a shame that Turkey gets no fans, because it's starting to get to like the circuit, and it's going to be gone next year pretty much, isn't it? So that's a bit of a shame, to be honest. But, you know, we're getting treated to a hell of a season, and let's hope it, Catalonia, well, we can hope.
Hello, Side Podcast. I had a little thought after the race, and I thought, there's no point having a little thought in keeping it to myself, so I thought I'd share it with everyone. Michael Schumacher was a second slower than Nico Rosberg in qualifying, and according to the things in Autosport, he's saying that there was nothing wrong with the car, it was all him, and he couldn't understand it. He said today that he made a mistake in one corner and overdrove, and you know, that was a problem. But the point is, he qualified a second behind him. Then after the race, where he finished a long way back again, he's made a comment about not experiencing the big joy of motor racing anymore. I have a feeling, and it's not a definite feeling, but I have a feeling that we may have seen Michael Schumacher's last ever Formula One race. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to find Paul de Resta in his car at Barcelona and Nico Hülkenberg in the Force India. I guess the other thing I should add is a word on Paul de Resta's race. I think today there's only one word you can use: unlucky.
Feedback. Hi, Christine and Mr. C. How you doing? This is Guy in Tampa, Florida. I'm just calling. I was listening to the Aside with Joe last week, and he was talking about NASCAR and product tie-ins and how F1 doesn't do a very good job at promoting itself. And one thing about America and American motorsports is nobody does tie-ins and self-promotion better than we do. And a lot of it, I think, what it comes down to is in F1, they're very big on preserving the dignity of the sport. In America, well, when it comes to money, we have no dignity. There's no dignity in NASCAR. They don't care about dignity. So I think that might be the basic difference in Formula One. They still have their dignity. In America, well, you know, we have none. All right, well, hey, I love the show. It's awesome. Keep it up. Fantastic. And I look forward to the next show.
Interesting, Guy. Maybe we should learn from this. Maybe Side Podcast can learn from what America does with sponsorships and money. And when we beg for donations, we can have no dignity. We can say, give us your money, and have no dignity about it. And say, give us your donations because we need your money. And that's maybe we're going wrong. Maybe, you know, we're too worried about dignity.
Yeah, but we're terribly British and we don't talk about money.
But that's what I'm saying. We could learn.
If anyone does want to donate, there are options on the
Loads of
Side
options.
Podcast homepage. Down the right-hand side, there are some yellow buttons and you can donate via PayPal there felt like it.
We are quite
But you
grateful.
Don't have to.
No, you do. No, you do.
Oh, I'm getting this dignity thing all
what
wrong.
What would an American say? That's what you've got to ask yourself.
While we're talking about donations, I did just want to say a quick shout out to Peter, who very kindly sent in a donation, and he left a little note in the message box that says, "It's a small contribution as a token of my thanks for your brilliant website. I'd like to send more. I note that the credit card transaction will appear on my bill as Christine. How am I going to explain that to my wife?" This is a good point.
Oh my god, I never thought of that before. We need to work on that.
Yeah, it really should say so podcast or something.
I'm gonna
it?
make yeah.
If you want to leave us a voicemail, the number is 012128TRACK. That's 012128872225. Or you can find us on Skype under the username SidePodcast. You can also email MP3s to me, christine@sidepodcast.com. And you can submit things, thoughts, words to my email address or via the contact form, which is still at sidepodcast.com/about.
Is it?
Even though it shouldn't be.
Is it really?
Should be at contact.
It's fine at about. People can find it. It's anyway. A lovely picture of you on the about page. Mm. There wouldn't be on the contact form.
Camillo sent a message via the contact form. It says, here's a quali solution. First, eliminate Q1. After all, we know who the last six usually are.
Yeah, but in what order?
And we have the 107% rollback. So let's only have two sessions, a 20-minute session for all drivers and a 10-minute session for the top 10 in the first session. Here's the catch. Each team gets only one set of each compound to be used in both sessions and must be returned after qualifying. If you save the soft tyres for the second session, you might not get there. Then all teams get the same amount of tyres for Sunday practice and the race.
That's a good idea. It falls apart when it rains.
In qualifying.
Basically, because you need intermediates and you need wets, and then it all falls to pieces, and this is the problem you have. The only way you could do it is if you did it in a place with a roof. Then that would work.
That would be quite noisy.
Be quite expensive.
I had another email from Rodolfo, who said, hi, Christine, I'm a regular listener from Panama, and I must say, I often find myself hitting the refresh button on iTunes to get the latest fix. I really enjoy the relaxed and jovial approach to it all. You have been very jovial today, haven't you?
I'll tell you something, bonus jovial today.
I wanted to drop you a quick note to ask you a question. I've been a fan of the sport for 8 years and have, over time, gained a deep appreciation for race strategy. The Malaysian GP was full of brinksmanship, but keeping track of it proved difficult. The mix of additional wear rate of the Pirelli's DRS cars plus the other F1 elements make the F1.com or even the Soft Power iPad app, which I know you endorse.
I do. I put my name to that. That's how much I loved it today.
It makes them too basic for this purpose. Do you know of another feed service that is more robust, paid or unpaid, or even a spreadsheet that I can use to plug data during a race? My goal is to at least keep track of a driver's tyre position, prime or option, and the number of laps on a tyre stint. Best, Rodolfo.
Mm.
I do not, and I must say, don't try and keep track of those things because it's far too confusing.
It sounds like a challenge for the fact box.
No, it doesn't.
Because there isn't anyone out there doing that. What I would like to plug, actually, we'll put a link in the show notes, is for Tony's work with F1 data. Tony has been doing fantastic stats, graphs, analysis, deep understanding of what goes on after the race. After, I think this in Turkey, he did it after free practice 1, 2, 3, after qualifying. Loads and loads and loads of data analysis. What he doesn't do, though, is do it during a race. So maybe there still is a gap, you know, for doing that. So we'll look into it, I think, is the answer to that one. No, I'm not aware of anybody else doing it. Maybe it's possible that we might have to do something along that line. Don't know. It's very tricky. There's a lot to do, lots to keep track of.
What you need to do is hire 24 people and give them each a driver and say, follow them.
Mm.
Next up, a message from Dap, who says, hi, old Dap here. And while it's been quite some time since I've written anything in, I just thought I'd share a thought I had during the race. DRS clearly played a pretty big part in this race, and watching Jensen and Lewis swapping position lap after lap in their first stint, thanks to its influence, got me thinking. There's clearly a lap time advantage to be had using the system, as can be seen in qualifying where its use is unrestricted. That benefit could only really be had, though, if the driver using DRS is able to successfully overtake, and the manoeuvring involved in defending a position would generally impose a pretty heady lap time penalty. Let's just say, though, that you have two teammates who, needing any advantage they can get to have a crack at a faster car well ahead, decided to cooperatively allow an overtake with DRS each lap, with no defending or alteration of line for either car. By alternating, each car could get, say, a half a second per lap on every other lap, which might be enough to keep someone ahead from opening up too much of a gap. DRS was introduced partly to replicate the performance advantage that slipstreaming, drafting to us Yanks, provides to a car attempting to overtake. But just as it's used strategically in series from NASCAR to cycling, where teammates drive in a pack for aero advantage, perhaps the DRS could be used or abused in the same way. With no ban on team orders this year, it seems like a remote but feasible possibility. Let me know what you think.
Right. Two things come to mind. Firstly,
it doesn't seem to give you that much of an advantage.
Well, hold on. Well, okay, let's go with that one first. Let's answer that one, and I'll come back to another point I thought I just had. But does it give you that much of an advantage? I'll tell you what the problem is going to be, is that two cars following each other closely are more likely to damage their tyres if you try and run that formation, I think you're going to wear out your tyres more, especially if you've got, say, Lewis and Jensen with two drivers who manage their tyres differently. It's going to be tricky to do. You know, I just don't think it's going to make that much difference. We did see Red Bull struggling when they had the DRS fully open in qualifying because they couldn't get the gear ratios. They were hitting the limiter because the gear ratios were set for the race. And I think the problem you're going to have in the race is if you did that, you'd just be bouncing off the limiter anyway. It might, you know, I just don't think it's going to work. It's going to cause too much damage to everything else. However, I did have another thought. Isn't it a shame that we don't go to Indy anymore? Because even when Formula One didn't have the DRS, in qualifying, two cars could run, could follow each other and get a slingshot and get a performance advantage and increase their qualifying time. And just thinking that the DRS at Indy would be magnificent if they set it up on that final swooping curve into the main straight. That would be amazing. May not be safe, but it's a shame we don't race there anymore.
I also think you would struggle to get teammates to do that for a prolonged period of time, because although they do work as a team, they're not all that friendly.
I'd only trust Lewis and Jensen to do it. I can't think of anybody else who are competent enough to carry it out lap after lap, because obviously Webber and Vettel are competent enough, but would just run each other off the track. But then you've got other teammates like Maldonado and Barrichello. I wouldn't want to play that game with Maldonado, thank you very much. If that's all right, you go ahead, Maldonado, and you do your lap, and I'll follow half a lap behind and do mine. Thanks.
Finally, I just wanted to pick up on something that someone commented. JBUSA said, one obscure but interesting thing I noticed this weekend, some of the drivers, most notably Schumi and Rosberg, are wearing stretchy, thin, tight-fitting driving gloves, almost a mechanics glove. Some of the drivers, such as the McLaren boys, are still wearing the conventional, bulky, welder-type gloves. I wonder if all those tiny buttons and switches on the steering wheels have forced a rethink of the handwear. Gotta be easier to work the gadgetry with the gloves Rosberg is wearing. Both McLaren and Mercedes wear the same brand, Alpine Stars, so the difference can't be due to a commercial obligation. I hadn't noticed.
Well, I looked at them and I couldn't tell the difference, to be honest with you. I looked at the still photographs and they look essentially the same to me. But I did notice that Lotus tweeted some pictures earlier in the weekend. They were having a meeting with their tailors, I believe, and they were discussing things like gloves and team wear and getting the best out of their clothing. So I wouldn't be surprised if somebody else hasn't noticed this and are looking into it. Maybe Mercedes were the first to bring it in. Wouldn't be surprised if more people have not paid attention to this and are already thinking about what else they can do, because there are more buttons, there's more to do. And, you know, you've got the magic paddle.
Yes, Schumacher has a magic paddle to fiddle with.
So he needs those special gloves.
As long as it doesn't compromise on the safety, there's no problem there.
I mean, it's down to the flame retardantness of them.
Retardantness. That sounds like something I'd
missing.
Say.
There's a technical word missing in there. Flame retardation value.
Ness.
Beck. Whatever.
That seems like a good place to end the show, seeing as you have lost all function.
We should wrap it up. It's gone. It's all gone. I do want a magic paddle, though. I want one before Spain. That's what's coming out. We've got 2 weeks till Spain. I demand a magic paddle, a side podcast magic paddle for our next podcast. Can I have one?